Hi, I'm Tom Evans, and I'm delighted today to be talking with Eric Reimer, co-director of Right Solution and the co-author of Castles of Tomorrow. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great, thank you. So, listen, great to talk to you, and congratulations on getting the book out there. Fantastic book. We're going to talk about the book shortly, but also before we do that, just wanted to get an idea of why 20 years ago, congratulations, by the way, you've been running Right Solution now for 20 years with your co-director, Sally Greenhill. Why did you set the company up in the first place?
I think it was really because, well, two reasons. Spectrum Communications, which is the company Sally and I work for, was realigning itself, and it didn't feel that the venue division side, which included consultancy on convention centres, fitted with their thinking in the future, because they were negotiating to be bought out by an American outfit called Carabina. And so that's one thing. But secondly, perhaps more importantly, Sally and I thought there was an opportunity to be grabbed to take the consultancy forward to cover destination and venue consultancy throughout the world that we thought would be good fun to do together.
Well, that's interesting because we think of convention centres as places where we might have party conferences or business exhibitions, but you describe them as being castles of tomorrow, which is very interesting.
We have some fantastic icons around the country, such as Warwick Castle, Bamborough Castle, and so on, which were built many, many centuries ago, but have become iconic buildings in England and Wales and Scotland. What are we doing today to create those iconic buildings for our successors into the future, into many centuries into the future, hopefully? And it turns out that convention centres have become those iconic landmark buildings in a city. And when a city decides to build a convention centre, signature architects vie to design that because it is an iconic building in the landscape of that particular city or town. So they are, in fact, the castles of tomorrow. They are very much a centre of excellence, indeed a centre for communication. And they bring in a huge amount of revenue into the local economy from delegate spend, spending not just in the convention centre, but in the hotels, restaurants, shops, and so on. So they're a great economic benefit for a city. They also very often have been built on derelict land within a city centre. So land that had become derelict because they're no longer needed. Very typically, Manchester Central, which was a railway station, and it fell into disuse right in the middle of the city. What else? The same with Edinburgh International Conference Centre. Again, an old marshalling yards that had fallen into disuse right in the city centre. So it regenerated a derelict area. So that's a positive benefit. But it also brought in economic benefit in terms of that area that had been regenerated by the convention centre had much more inward investment. So new offices were built, hotels, shops, restaurants, as a result of usually the local council funding such a thing as the convention centre. So they bring economic benefit, they bring regeneration. They also, of course, are fantastic for the local population, insofar as the local population can earn money by providing services for the convention centre, jobs are created, but also very often, such as in the International Convention Centre in Birmingham, there's a civic amenity, Symphony Hall, which is for the local population. That's part of the convention centre development. So there are many benefits to convention centres, not just for party politicals and for exhibitions.
And you talk about some of the brownfield sites, as I believe derelict land is termed in the UK. You talk about the UK convention centres you work with, but from the outset, Right Solution was an international consultancy. Where have your tendrils reached to around the globe?
Well, we've worked pretty much everywhere except Antarctica. one of the one of the areas we worked for quite some time, for example, was in Malaysia, on the Putrajaya Convention Centre, where the government, and particularly the Prime Minister, was building a new federal capital. Kuala Lumpur, of course, is the commercial capital of Malaysia, but Putrajaya has become the federal capital, a bit like Canberra in Australia as opposed to Sydney, or New York and Washington, D.C. And part of that development, which is probably 45 minutes outside downtown Kuala Lumpur, was a fantastically designed convention center, which we advised on and also made operational. So our big issue there was to get the thing up and running. They didn't have the existing convention center in downtown Kuala Lumpur was a separate entity altogether. This is a government, primarily a government facility. And we were appointed to get it open, up and running. And in fact, the first event was, well, we like to start off small, had 19,000 registered delegates, 57 heads of state from all the Islamic countries around the world. It was a massive, massive event. And Sally and I were duty managers on that night, or for that event, which ran for 3 or 4 days. Fantastic building, fantastic operation.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, you think about design consultancy firms being involved with, let me like the design and the operation, but it sounds like Right Solution operates post the facility being set up. So, what can you sort of take us through what aspects of the Right Solution you actually deal with?
Well, we deal with all aspects of the development of a destination for business tourism, be it a country or a convention centre. To start off with, we will do market studies and feasibility studies to establish what the need is, because we always approach things from the end user point of view. There are two types of end user in a convention centre environment. One is the operator, and the other, of course, is the customer, the organiser and the delegates. And we have got experience over the years of both sides of the coin, as it were, and that's where our input is valuable, because we have actually done it. It's not just theoretical. So we start off with a market study to establish what the need is. And from there, we can establish how big the facility should be. So we would write the brief with the expert client. We write the brief for the facility, which includes number of rooms, sizes of rooms, ancillary facilities, and the technical side of the design, if you like. So it's giving the designers the guidelines to achieve a user-friendly building. So that's part of it. We then work with the design team right through. As the design develops, we're giving them the end-user advice on their designs, and that's in terms of architectural, mechanical, structural, electrical, all the various disciplines. And so we actually work as on the client side, as the expert client, if you like, and work right through with designers, then the contractors who actually construct it, right through to opening. At the same time, in parallel with the actual design and construction, we're working on the operation of the building. In many instances, there isn't an operator to start off with. So we start off writing budgets, operational budgets, marketing budgets. We write the business plan for the building, and then work with, as well, it depends on the operational model. But let's say the city is going to have an arm's length company wholly owned by the city to operate this facility. We will then work with the city to start recruiting the right people, then working with those people as they come on board in terms of training, and still working with on things like marketing plans, because you've got to market these things many years out in order to fill them on the day of opening. So we work with the operational side in terms of budgeting and standard operating procedures, fixtures, fittings and equipment, all sorts of individual detail to get the place up and running. And so really, our consultancy goes from soup to nuts, if you like, but at a very practical level, hands-on level in many instances.
I would imagine you'd have to get into some strange minutiae, like when there's a break in the middle of a conference, that everyone wants to come out and either eat or go and relieve themselves in the and use the facilities. So you've got to design for these peaks and troughs of usage, I would imagine.
Well, absolutely. I've become known to many of the clients as Mr. Toilet, because it's a very valid point that you make, but it's actually a very practical point as well, because during conferences, there is a short period of time, coffee break, lunch break, tea break, when people go to the loo, unlike in a lot of other places of assembly where it's a sporting event, something like that. You can go to the loo when you want, but in a conference, you're listening to the message and then during the coffee break and go to the loo. So there's, as you say, a big peak and trough attitude to that. Now, that the problem is, in the original British standards, that wasn't taken into account. So the British standards would not give the sufficient amount of toilets for that peak and trough nature. So I developed a formula for calculating toilets that did meet that need, because if you don't meet the need properly, then it's going to extend the coffee breaks because people will take much longer to go and go to the loo. And that eats into the program, which of course is death for an organizer. They need to keep the program. So we developed this formula and it created a lot more toilet, excuse me, a lot more toilets than the British standard at the time. And so we had to argue that quite often with our architects and so on, because it takes up lots of space. Okay, things have changed now. The latest British standard takes into account places of assembly where toilet usage is only during intervals. So the British standard is now caught out. Still not, I don't think, quite adequate, particularly for the male provision. So I still use the formula I wrote years and years ago. But that's a practical element which comes out of usage. How many times have you heard people complain, particularly ladies, saying, oh, I had to queue for ages for the loo? So we don't want to have that in our convention centres.
Wonderful. It sounds like the P and trough formula. So the P formula for going to the loo and the trough for going to eat at lunchtime.
Absolutely.
There you go. So if you look over all the projects that you've worked on, are there consistent areas where you come across, you encounter grief and problems in the design, the speccing, and the build?
Yes, there are probably two or three main areas that you've got to get right. One is access, and that's access for people and goods. The other is things like structural loadings, which have caused a lot of arguments in the past, because I would write in my brief that I want floor loading of X and a ceiling loading of Y. And very often in various projects, the architects or the structural engineers have said, but you can't possibly need all that loading. What on earth would you want to do that for? And when I talk about, well, you know, we need to get a lorry in there, we need to get an articulated vehicle in. And they say, why? I said, well, it might be the product launch of a new Scania. Oh, they say. Oh, well, that's okay, but that floor loading is still high for a lorry. I said, yes, but the next week we've got a medical conference in, and in the exhibition there are MRI scanners which weigh 3 tons, and they sit on very small points. And eventually the argument is won, usually. But it is a big argument, because structural loading is very early on in the design process and has a big impact on cost. But if we limit the organizer's imagination by not having enough structural loading, then it's a poor product and the customer will vote with his feet and not book. So loading is a big one. And I was talking about floor loading there, the MRI scanners and Artics and so on, but ceiling loading is also very important, because there's some amazing things hung from ceilings in convention centres. In one particular instance, I remember it well. I love the pictures. We actually did the opening event, the trade launch of this new convention centre. And just to show that it was easy to use and flexible, we brought in a 40-ton articulated truck, full-size articulated truck, into the hall. But we went one further by then flying it from the ceiling and laying up a banquet underneath. Now that caused a lot of jaw dropping, but it also made the practical point of, look, we can fly stuff, we can drive trucks in, it's a great venue for you to be able to use.
And I guess if you do that, you've got to think about the ceiling loading and who's on the floor above it, because that's a floor and a ceiling loading together.
Absolutely. And that's where it can increase the budget, but it's a necessary increase.
Yeah. And I guess also as convention centres are used for pop concerts and the like, you've got to think about, 20,000 people all jumping up and down at the same time.
Yeah, it's a good point. I have had in the past some arguments with structural engineers on not just the floor loading, but you have to take into account something called natural resonance. It's like when a platoon of soldiers march across a bridge, they have to break step because they could set up a resonance that hits the natural frequency of that bridge and the bridge would start to vibrate. We all remember the famous bridge in London that started to vibrate when people walked across it. That's called natural resonance. And on a normal floor, the resonance is about 4 hertz. But for the dancing and pop concerts and that sort of thing, you need to stiffen that floor to 8 hertz so you don't get that natural resonance. I've had arguments with structural engineers who said, oh, no. We didn't know that you're going to have dancing and that sort of thing. I said, well, if you look at the brief, it talks about dinner dances, for example. And then we also have, and done it many times, had marching bands as part of the show. So it's not just the weight on the floor or the ceiling, but it's things like natural resonance as well.
So you think about the projects that you've worked on in general. Are there any particular projects that stand out for you in terms of how enjoyable you found them or aspects of the projects that you particularly enjoy?
Yes. It's a very simple answer. The people. The people in the conference exhibition industry, the hospitality industry generally, are usually very friendly and open and gregarious. And one of the things that we do with virtually every project we work on is take the client team to see other venues, because that's the best way to make a point. And very often the client in a city has never built a convention center before or anything like that, so they want to go and see other convention centers. And invariably what you're doing in effect is going to another venue and saying, here, we'd like you to welcome and show around a potential competitor. But always the people in the venues said, no, that's great, please come in, and they welcome you and they show you around, they spend time with you. And when I've been working on a convention center, it becomes very stressful, if you like. You're getting towards the end of deadlines to meet and, you know, get the place up and running and make it perfect, or as perfect as you can. So you work very closely with the staff and you get to know them really well. And that's the biggest enjoyment, the people in the business.
So you've been going for 20 years now, Eric. Again, congratulations for that. How do you see the future for Right Solution and the conference center industry as a whole?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where I think over the years people said, oh, we don't need any more. How many convention centers do you need? And, you know, meetings are going the way of the dinosaur because, you know, we've got video conferencing, we've got Skype, we don't need these places. But it's interesting because video conferencing, when it's introduced, there's great cries that that's the death of the convention center. Since it's been introduced, the use of video conferencing has soared. It's a huge increase over the years, and it continues to increase. But interestingly, so have conferences. their number has increased as well, and continues to grow. Not a huge amount, I mean, particularly in recently with the recession and so on, but it's still a growing number of events. And the main reason for that is because people relate to people. A 2D image, even nowadays, you can get 3D images, which are very good, but it's still not the same as standing next to a person in the foyer chatting. And that's where most of the business is done. Networking has become internet. And that's why we have conferences and will continue to have conferences. One of the things that could well happen in the future is that just as we have got video conferencing, we have got 3D holography, there may be a time in the future where we have a Star Trek beam me up, Scotty. It's being worked on at the moment by quantum physicists. Obviously, we can't do it with people. Well, not today. But one of the things we've learned over the last 20 years or more, particularly in the conference business, is that the pace of change is getting ever faster. And so we don't know. It may be next year, maybe 20 years. This beam me up teleportation will be cracked. Now, if that happens, wow, that's going to have a huge effect on the industry. It won't have an effect on the conference center necessarily, because people still want to meet and feel and touch and smell and network in that foyer. What it would have a huge effect on is the hotel industry and transport industry. Because if you could just instantly go from your house to the conference in Sydney, you don't need airplanes. You don't need hotels. So you still have a conference center, but no airline industry, no hotel industry. Okay, maybe that's far-fetched.
But who knows?
When the first conference center opened in the UK, we didn't have airplanes at all. Now we're going to the moon and Mars and so on. So who knows?
And when we had the Great Exhibition in 1851, people weren't having these conversations over Skype as we're having right now, which is quite amazing.
Absolutely.
And so how do you see Right Solution continuing in the future?
Well, people say to me, God, what are you working on? How can we afford new convention centres? Haven't we got enough? Well, there is a demand out there. There are more convention centres. More and more cities realise the economic benefits of having a new convention centre, and also the reputational benefits. Because to have conventions, your city hosting a major event and brings in a fantastic PR opportunity for you and your city. So more and more cities say, oh yes, we'll have a convention centre, please. But also, there are quite a number of convention centres that are getting quite old. And we've worked recently on an extension to the Edinburgh International Conference Centre, which is not an old centre, it's just successful, and so it's expanded. We're at this very moment working on the extension to the Belfast Waterfront Hall to create more dedicated conference and exhibition space. Brighton have been talking for a long time about a new convention centre to replace the Brighton Centre, which is 40 years old, over 40 years old. So there is extensions, expansions, as well as new convention centres, and that's our business.
And it's interesting that these people have come back to you. You were involved with the inception of the projects, and all these years later, they've come back to you to get your advice again.
Well, it's very heartwarming because, as I say, it's a people business, and it's great to be able to have that sort of relationship where they say, oh, we're going to expand, we're going to extend, oh, let's get hold of the Right Solution, come back and help us with that. So that's super. It's also where we get our business from. As I said, one of the first things a city does when they say, oh, let's have a convention centre, is they want to go, or the city officials or the project team, whoever it may be, want to go and look at other places to see how they did it and what they've done. And one of the things that very often happens is they say, well, how did you go about developing your convention center? And in more and more as we work on more, our customers say, oh, go and speak to the right solution. They'll help you through it. And we get referrals from our existing customer base, if you like. We don't do any marketing and advertising as such. We get lots of referrals there, which is very warm, very heartwarming.
And if someone wants to find you over the internet or get a copy of the book, Castles of Tomorrow, where's the best place for people to find you online?
Well, the website is www.rightsolution.co.uk. One of the things we often get kickbacks on emails about is people will say, well, people will write right solutions, plural. It's right solution, singular, because there is one right solution. And we help cities to get the right solution for their convention center needs.
Eric, it's been a joy and a pleasure to speak to you today. May you continue in business, doing what you do and connecting people for many, many years. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.